Come we that love the Lord and let our joys be known. Join in a song with sweet accord. Join in a song with sweet accord. And thus around the throne, and thus around the throne. We're marching to Zion. Beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching upward to Zion, the beautiful city of God. Then let our songs abound and every tear be dry. We're marching through Emmanuel's ground. We're marching through Emmanuel's ground to fairer worlds on high, to fairer worlds on high. We're marching to Zion. Beautiful, beautiful Zion. We're marching upward to Zion, the beautiful city of God. Let's be seated.
All right. Good morning and welcome to Chenal. We are so excited that you're with us today. If you're joining us online, welcome. We're glad that you're here as well. I want to start with a question this morning. It's this. Have you ever been disappointed to discover that someone wasn't who you thought they were? Perhaps it's not a person, but a job or a circumstance that maybe your expectations simply weren't met. Regardless, I'm sure that we've all experienced this in some form or fashion, that feeling of disappointment. And someone not being who we thought they should be, or who we thought that they were. A few weeks ago, I was at Sam's Club. This is not a sponsored Walmart brand story by any means, but a few weeks ago, I was at a Sam's Club. I was at the Sam's Club on Bowman, and I normally like to go around lunch. I'm just going to be honest with you. Samples. If you go around lunch, you can just kind of take a little journey throughout the store, especially if you start in that back left corner. You can really make your way through a whole dining experience. If you play your cards right, it's just how it can go. So I'm starting in the back left, trying the samples. I'm turning things down too. I'm not greedy, but I know what I like. And so I'm going through, I'm seeing what they've got, and I eventually make it to the bakery section. And just so you guys can know when you go this week, bakery section is where the desserts are going to be. Those are normally going to be like a pastry, maybe even just a small cake or something like that. And by the time that I'd got there that day, it was kind of small little mini cakes. And I had a couple of samples already, so I was ready to turn my attention towards dessert. And so I go to the booth and I say, "Excuse me, ma'am, may I have a sample?" She looks at me and she says, "Absolutely." And she says, "You know what? You wait." She said, "I want to give you an extra sample because I appreciate all the hard work you do in this city. Means a lot to me." I was touched. At this point in my day, I had just been at Sam's. You know, it's not a heavy day, but I was just like, "Oh, okay." And I look at the lady, and I'm like, "You're welcome." In my mind, some of you know where this is going based off of the question, but in my mind, I thought, I have blessed this lady somehow. And we are constantly trying to figure out who is watching our YouTube channel, trying to figure out who are the views. And I thought, this is it. This is one of the individuals who watches our sermons weekly. And whatever I have done one week, she saw me and she thought, I need to bless this kid because he's blessed me. And I took that sample. I took it proudly because I knew that I had done something good for this person. And maybe she had stumbled upon our meditate on this too, that I know that each of you read every single Wednesday when it comes into your emails. Some of you are laughing, but okay. But my point is this, like in this moment, I'm talking with this lady and I'm like, I have absolutely blessed her. You're welcome. I take that first sample and I start scooting my cart away. And then I hear, "Hey," and I turn and she says, "You're not Mitch McCoy." Now, some of you might know who Mitch McCoy is. We do not have a picture for comparison. We do have a picture for comparison. This is his Twitter account. Mitch McCoy. I think Jamie needs to be calm down a little bit, Jamie. I don't think we look alike. Perhaps it was the glasses. I don't know. But she says, "Hey, you're not Mitch McCoy from the news." And I turned and I said, "No, ma'am, I'm not Mitch McCoy from the news. My name is Bryce, and to my enemies, Dr. Bryce." But I said, "No, ma'am, I'm not Mitch McCoy." And she said, "Well, that's who I thought you were. That's why I gave you the extra sample." And it was this, it was the weirdest moment of my day. Because one, I acknowledge the glasses. We do look similar. Mitch is a fantastic news reporter at KRK. He's going to be moving to St. Louis too, so we're thankful that he's been in the city for a while. But I tell that story because of kind of mistaken identity. In that moment, I was not who that person thought I was. I was undeserving of that second sample. And it hit me that day as I stood confused inside of the Sam's Club about the disappointment when we're let down by people. When we learn that someone isn't who we thought they were. And even though I stood there humiliated, but still leading that second sample, it was a valuable lesson about that. About when people aren't who we think that they are. The scene of the triumphal entry has always fascinated me. Especially when we tell it to children. Because when we tell that story to children, what we like to do, and the story goes a lot like this: here comes Jesus, and look how happy everyone is. And for kids, that is absolutely how we should tell that story. But there are so many undertones that are occurring within this story that can impact how we really understand it. And those undertones begin with Jesus instructing the disciples to go and find a colt that no one has ever ridden and bring it to him. Here in verse 28. After Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethphage and Bethany at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you. As you enter it, you will find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, 'Why are you untying it?' say, 'The Lord needs it.'" And after they complete the task and they bring it back, they throw their cloaks on it, in Luke chapter 19, verse 35 through 36, which is immediately followed by individuals placing their cloaks along the road. They brought it back to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it. As he went along, the people spread their cloaks on the road. And this is where we start looking at some of these mistaken identity elements in the story of the triumphal entry. Because these individuals that are along the road, they are seeing something that maybe we aren't seeing. Because they are seeing an earthly king coming into Jerusalem. This action here, go back to that last verse. This action here of putting the cloaks along the road is a direct reference to 2 Kings chapter 9. When the people exalted Jehu as their king. And after they, in the story of 2 Kings chapter 9, after they spread their garments, in that same scene, they begin to shout, "Jehu is king," declaring that an earthly king has arrived. That's exactly what we see happening here in the triumphal entry. So do you see it? It's the crowd misses the mark. But it's not just the crowd who misses the mark. Luke recognizes that they missed the mark as well. In class this morning, I mentioned that the book of Luke and Acts, the combination, it's Luke is a historical writer, but he's got a personal bias as well. And so when writing his gospel, Luke likely had access to other references and stories about the life of Jesus, and likely this particular scene as well. But in his gospel, Luke omits something that we love to tell the children. We love to let the children act it out as well, the people waving palm branches. But if you look at the story that Luke tells, there are no palm branches. I know. It's kind of sad, right? We like that part. We like the start. Everybody's happy. Everybody's got branches. Not in the Gospel of Luke. Luke omits it. The reason that Luke omits this is because these branches would have drawn attention to the nationalistic hopes of the audience. That a revolution is coming. That a government overthrow is right around the corner. This is referenced in the Apocrypha. We're not going to get too deep into that this morning. I know the Apocrypha at 10 a.m. on a Sunday isn't really that exciting. But if you need the references, I can give them to you. But my point is this, is that Luke sees this. He knows it's in the story. And when he's writing this story, he doesn't want that attention drawn to the fact that the people in the crowd, the people in the audience, they don't get it. They don't understand that Jesus has not come to overthrow the government. Jesus has not come to take over their cities, but take over their hearts. And I think Luke does this because he knows how much they wanted an earthly king. They wanted someone who would overthrow the Romans and in their minds bring justice to their oppressors. And in their defense, they knew that Jesus was different. They'd seen it with their own eyes. They'd heard the parables, they had witnessed the miracles, and they'd experienced the healings of Christ. I mean, look at how they respond when they see him. In verse 37, when he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all the miracles that they had seen. Luke does something here too, where he's emphasizing the disciples versus the crowd. Luke doesn't want this to look as a government overthrow is happening. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord, peace in heaven and glory in the highest. They believe that this is their moment. This is their earthly king entering into Jerusalem to overthrow. But again, it's not the cities that he's come for, it's their hearts. But you see, it's not just the crowd. In verse 39, the Pharisees are there as well, and they tell Jesus, "Teacher, rebuke your disciples." Whereas the crowd wants the government to be overthrown and Jesus to be their earthly king, notice that the Pharisees do not want Jesus to rule over them in any way, shape, or form. The part that is the most fascinating to me is that Jesus has been trying to tell them that he was not an earthly king. Time and time again, Jesus attempts to tell his audience that he is not here to overthrow a government, but to change who they are. Change the way that they think, the way that they treat people, and the way that they live. And if we were to take a step back this morning, even just within the book of Luke chapter 19, two things happen before the triumphal entry. The first is that Jesus talks to Zacchaeus and invites himself to Zacchaeus' house. One of my favorite things that Jesus does, because he's like, "Hey, I'm coming to your house." Zacchaeus has to do it. Anyway, but then Jesus also tells a parable. And this parable isn't one that we lean a lot into. And I've wondered why, as I started crafting this series that turns our attention to Easter, I wondered why the parable that happens in the Gospel of Luke right before the triumphal entry, why it's not told a lot. But in short, the parable is about a man who will become king. But to become king, he must leave for a little while. Verse 12, he said, "A man of noble birth went to a distant country to have himself appointed king and then to return. So he called 10 of his servants and gave them 10 minas, which are just Roman coins. Put this money to work, he said, until I come back." But look at verse 14. Servants hated him and sent a delegation after him saying, "We don't want this man to be our king." The very scene that Luke paints before Jesus, the very parable that Luke retells before Jesus enters the city in this triumphal way, is Jesus telling a parable that explains that what they think is going to happen isn't what's going to happen. See, the king has to leave for a little while. People are going to get mad, and so on and so forth. And so the story continues, the parable continues in Luke 15. He was made king, however, and return home. Then he sent for the servants to whom he had given the money in order to find out what they had gained with it. Now this is where the story gets very interesting, because we start to see the responses of the servants. Remember, the king had gone, he'd given them 10 coins and said, "I want you to do something with this." Now the first one doubles the amount that he was given. Go back just a little bit, last verse. The first one doubles it. He said, "You've given me 10 coins. I have added 10 to that number, 20 coins." Easy math. Second one walks up and he says, "You've given me 10 coins. I now have 15 coins. But the third hid what was given. Go back to the last one. Sorry. Go to the next one. There we go. Then another servant came and said, "Sir, here is your mina. I've kept it and laid it away in a piece of cloth. I was afraid of you because you are a hard man. You take out what you did not put in and reap what you did not sow." Now stop right there for a second. I wonder why this story is not often told in connection to the triumphal entry. It's a challenging parable. But the third one doesn't do anything with what he's been given. In fact, what he does is not just he doesn't do anything, he hides it. The text says he placed a piece of cloth over it so that no one would touch it, no one would see it. It would be in this safe place. It's kind of how he is emphasizing this. But he doesn't do anything with what he's been given. And the parable ends with these words, "I tell you that to everyone who has, more will be given. But as for the one who has nothing, even that, even what they have will be taken away." I've thought a lot about this particular parable because in the very next line, Jesus enters into the city of Jerusalem. They go through the scene where they find the colt, and then people are cheering as Jesus enters in the city. But that is what follows this parable. A challenging parable about coins. You see, in the eyes of Luke, the parable and the triumphal entry are woven together. Both include characters who are misunderstood or misrepresented. In the parable, the servants, they don't like the king. For whatever reason, maybe it's because he doesn't do what they want him to do. Perhaps he isn't who they expected him to be, but you can feel their anger when things don't go the way they want them to. Remember that when the king leaves, they send a delegation behind the king saying, "Do not make this man our king." And like Jesus, the king has to leave for a while before he returns as king. But in the absence of the king, they/we should still be doing work. This mentality and call to live is exactly what Jesus had been attempting to proclaim to his followers at every single junction throughout his ministry. We are called to live. We are not called to sit on our hands, hide our gifts, hide our talents. We are called to do with the passions and gifts that God has given us. But time and time again, the audience misses it. But it's not just the audience that misses it. Sometimes we miss it as well. Whereas they fail to see that Jesus is not going to overthrow the Romans, we have our own governments and things that we want Jesus to accomplish in our lives that maybe God is not calling Jesus to do. And just like the the Israelites in the story, that Jesus will not exalt the Israelites above the Romans here as well. And there's a question that I want to land on this morning, and I think it's fitting in the context of the triumphal entry. And at times, are we making Jesus more into who we want him to be? Are we shaping Jesus into our own version of ourselves? Or are we truly listening to the teachings of Christ in our lives and allowing them to shape who we are and how we live? Are we allowing Jesus to shape how we treat others and love our neighbors? Christ calls us to live out his mission in our lives. As declared followers of Jesus, we are called to follow the example of the Master and not make our own path. This sermon was an entry into where I want to go in the rest of this series. Because as we start a little bit earlier than normal with the triumphal entry, next week we'll talk about the betrayal. And the following week we'll talk about the death and then the resurrection on Easter Sunday. And there's a few things that I would love for you to do as we enter into this season. One, take time and look through the stories this week. I've listed all the scriptures in our e-notes, which all of you read every single week. I need to hear that. But but look at the scriptures. Spend time in them. And ask, where is God leading you in this season? And the question, again, that we're ending with this morning is, who are we making Jesus out to be? Are we reflecting Christ in our lives, in our actions, in our thoughts, in the way that we treat other people? Because again, as we enter into the season of Easter, my call is to let us live how Christ calls us to live. Let us use our gifts and our talents and not hide them. To not put them under a cloth and say, hey, we're just afraid that we're going to mess up. Hey, I'm afraid that if I do something wrong or if I try something that doesn't work out, that God will get mad at me. That's not how it works. God wants us to try. God wants us to live. Friends, we are called to live. And in the season of Easter, we celebrate what God is doing through Jesus. And as Jesus enters into the city of Jerusalem in the triumphal entry, I hope that Jesus enters all of our lives. But we understand who Jesus is and who Jesus called us to be. We're called to live, we're called to serve, we're called to love. Let's stand together and sing.